This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. In the age of online gaming, people thirst for immersive, interpersonal experiences. One manifestation of that is the soaring popularity of escape rooms. There are already several escape rooms in Greater Cincinnati, and a new one will open soon at the Banks. To talk about this phenomenon, we are joined now by David and Lisa Spira, a husband and wife team who review escape rooms through their blog, Room Escape Artist. David, Lisa, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, it's
an
honor.
Let's begin with the basic. What is, for those of us who are not initiated, what is an escape room?
Okay, so escape rooms are immersive activities for a group of people. Could be as small as 2, could be as many as 12, although 12 is quite a lot of people. What you do is you enter into an immersive environment. There's a mystery, there's puzzles to solve, and you collectively work together to figure out how to unravel all of that and get yourselves out.
The goal is to get out of the room.
The goal varies heavily.
It's usually to get out of the room, or that's how it started, as the phenomenon is called escape rooms. It was about getting out of the room. But today the goal could be anything. It could be disarm the missile or anything,
okay.
I guess.
Yeah. So
get yourself off of Santa's naughty list.
Right.
So these things have evolved over the years.
Quite a bit. They started off, really the idea evolved out of video games. There used to be an escape, there still is an escape the room genre of video game. And in 2007, a company called Scrap out of Kyoto, Japan, decided to make a real life version. That same company brought the very first escape rooms to the United States in 2012. And in late 2013, two companies called Puzzle Break and Escape the Room opened up, and that started the boom in the industry. But back then, all of these were very straightforward. Here's a whole bunch of puzzles in a lightly themed environment. Solve them and get out. Now they have turned into full-on amusements.
So when you say full-on amusements, meaning that they can actually attract people just as a, this is what people will take a little trip to end up and do one of these?
Yeah, so escape room tourism has become a thing. There are people who travel all over the world. There's a community of us, and it's growing by the day, who will travel wherever the games are really great.
And as amusements, what we're saying is they've gone from these lightly themed office spaces with a few different props to full-on set design, sound design, interactions, tech. That doesn't mean that there aren't locks and keys, but they've become these much bigger, more immersive experiences.
So you said this started in 2007 and came to the United States in 2012. How many of these are there in the United States at this point?
We publish the growth statistics for the industry every summer. So in our publication from this July, there were 2,300 locations in the United States where you can go play an escape room. Some of those locations have multiple different games, maybe even as many as 10 games. Some of them only have one. Some of those locations are single operator companies, and some of them are affiliated with larger chains or franchises. And when I looked last night, we're now up to 2,400 locations where you can go play.
So where you can go play, that's what this is about, right? But play, but learn through playing?
You can play, you can learn through playing. It depends, you know, it all depends on how the game was written. Some of them will actually impart knowledge. For the most part, they're focused on fun. And the knowledge and the things that you'll gain is what you learn about yourself and your friends as you play with them. You know, the act of playing with another person really is it's revealing in a very, you know, in a very fun way.
So my understanding is that a lot of different kinds of groups could do this. So, for example, a work group that maybe is trying to better understand each other and what their talents are and their roles could do it. A family group could do it. That might introduce other sort of elements into it. So this is done as a group activity. seems to me there's lots of potential here for frustration and bringing out all kinds of knowledge about each other that maybe people want to keep quiet most of the time.
So one of the things that's interesting about escape rooms is that there's a lot to do, and there is a relatively short amount of time to do it. An hour is a decent chunk of time, but it starts to go by pretty quickly when you have, you know, a series of objectives.
And is that standard, an hour?
An hour is the industry standard. There are games that are shorter. There are a handful of games that are larger. But an hour plus or minus 10 minutes is probably 98% of the market. I'm making that up, but it sounds right.
It sounds right.
So some of the things to keep in mind when you're playing is that these games are really about collaboration and communication. So when you are going with your corporate group, if you really want to just have, you know, if you really want to learn about how the group dynamic operates, the advice that we give is to not have the manager go into the room with them, because the manager brings in a power structure that everybody reports to that person.
The workplace manager.
Not the workplace manager.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So if you remove that power structure, then you can start to see how different people actually react to one another without having that rigid power structure in place. If you're going with your family, one of the things that we hear from escape room owners all the time is the kids are always right and the parents never listen to the kids. One of the most common hints that we hear of from escape room owners when they have families in the room is the kid was right. So it might reveal some stuff, you know, if you have someone who really shows up and misbehaves, you know, that's going to be an unfortunate thing, but that's probably on them. And they're probably going to do that same thing, whether you're, you know, out for dinner or at a party, you know. This is really just about, you know, putting the focus on fun. And as long as everybody in the room is willing to do that for an hour, you're going to have a good time.
So obviously you've done a lot of these. That's the way you find out about them. That's the way you get the basis for blogging about it. How many times have the two of you been in groups where you've been stumped? You haven't been able to solve it. You can't escape the room in whatever the allotted time is?
At this point, because we do these so often, we almost always escape, but we have a number of times not escaped. A lot of times for us, it's when we're traveling and we're on the road and we're only the two of us in a room that was built for way more people than that. Or sometimes it's because we just had a really bad day. Or sometimes it's because the room really wasn't designed fairly. Amateur puzzle designers, sometimes it takes a few tries to get a game flow that really works for players. So when they haven't been play tested enough or haven't been well enough designed, that's another factor. So we generally get out, but it's definitely not a given. We have to play hard.
I think there are two games in this calendar year that we haven't gotten out of.
So what is it that makes for a good game? Challenging on the one hand, but still well-designed and fair. I mean, you got to put both of those together, I suspect, to have a really good experience.
Yeah, so challenge is, you know, people go to an escape room to be challenged, but again, the time frame is really short. So you don't necessarily need to have a difficulty level that's through the roof to keep a group of people occupied and challenged for an hour. What makes something really great is the flow of the game. It's the attention to detail. It's the way that they make you feel like you're on an adventure. Those are some of the things that really, you know, that really make a game wonderful. And then you have the basics like customer service. You know, it's amazing the difference that, you know, wonderful customer service brings. It can elevate a game that was okay, and customer service can also really damage a game that was wonderful, but, you know, you didn't have a great time. And fortunately, this industry really has a lot of owners who care deeply. So we see generally a lot of really good customer service around.
So what are, and you each may have a different answer for this, but Give me one or two of your favorite escape room experiences and what the design was, and, you know, sort of concretely so people can understand what the challenge might have been. Lisa, why don't we start with you?
We've played all over the country and all over the world, and one of my favorite experiences was at Escape My Room in New Orleans. One of the things I like about their style is that they've themed all of their games around one family. It's this old New Orleans family called the Delaportes, and from the moment you walk up to their facility, you are in this immersive environment where it's themed, and it just starts right away. And their game, Inventor's Attic, was just an incredible game of wonderful puzzles that flowed really well, that told the story of one of the characters of the family. And we love that game. We played it last year, and we gave it an award. We give out an award at the end of every year, the Golden Locken Award, and that was one of last year's winners that we truly enjoyed.
When you say puzzle, give me an example of that. What in this context?
So one of the things, this is actually a good, I'm going to segue a little bit. One of the things that we hear when we introduce the idea of escape rooms to people is puzzles, I don't like them. And the truth is, I'm sure that that's true. I'm sure that there is some type of puzzle that people don't like, but there are so many different types. You know, you have math puzzles, which often, you know, from Americans, bring out some ire. You have word puzzles, you have logic puzzles, you have spatial, you have dexterity and physical challenge puzzles. It all ranges, there's a huge range, and escape rooms cover tons of them. So there's always something for someone to solve. But in Inventor's Attic, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I think what makes a really great puzzle is that you're physically interacting. You're picking up stuff, you're manipulating stuff. It might be buttons or it might be physical objects. And Inventor's Attic was very tangible. We really picked up and moved and observed the environment and figured out, you know, where things were supposed to go, how things were supposed to be set. I'm trying to explain this game without giving any spoilers.
Right. So, because New Orleans is a popular place for people to go.
Right. And kind of figure out, like, how we can manipulate this thing to accomplish a goal, or how we can move this thing or set this thing or, you know, change these items. And when you do that, the room responds. Something else happens. You know you've completed it. You know you can move forward. You find out, oh, this is open to me now. I can go here. I can touch this. I can see what it might do. And that makes really great puzzles and really great flow.
So it sounds like, because there's all these different kinds of puzzles, having a group who have maybe different interests and different talents really is good. Somebody might be really good at math. Somebody might really be good at language games. And, you know, there could be all – you could really draw on the talents of different people.
That is absolutely one of the keys, especially for newer teams where the people aren't experienced. The key to success is to have a diverse group of people who think differently. If you are a computer programmer and you work in a department of programmers and you all go to an escape room, you're handicapped. You would be much better off if you had, you know, a graphic designer and a writer and, you know, a teacher and a, you know, if you had a whole bunch of different people with incredibly diverse backgrounds, I would guarantee you already have a leg up.
And I think one of the things that goes hand in hand with that is, because an escape room is only an hour and it moves really quickly, if you're looking at something and you realize, like, this is not my puzzle, I'm not going to be able to solve this, or I'm not the best person to solve it, you know, pass it off to your teammates. Say, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I think goes together. This is what I've solved so far, or I think I might have solved so far. You might be a better person to try this. Because a lot of times, the puzzles in an escape room are meant to be solved pretty quickly because there just isn't that much time. But you might not be the right person for that puzzle.
Okay. David, I don't want to – I started with Lisa about her favorite and give us a concrete example. How about you? Do you have a favorite?
If I have to pick a favorite, and I love so very many of these, there's a company in Houston, Texas called Strange Bird Immersive. And what they have done is they have taken two different forms of immersive entertainment, immersive theater and escape rooms, and they have married them together as perfectly as I can imagine anyone doing. It opens up with a little bit of a performance. It's not invasive. It's very welcoming. You end up in a 60-minute escape room where you're uninterrupted by the actors. The room is mechanical and it's not overwhelmingly fancy. And this game is telling the story of a Houdini seance. And then depending upon whether you win or lose, you get one of two different endings at the end, also performed by the actors. And it's legitimately emotionally impactful, which is a thing that we had kind of expected we would see in escape room one day that would tell a story that was emotionally powerful. And we didn't expect to see one as polished and as refined as The Man from Beyond when we found it. It stands out to me, for so many different reasons.
So you mentioned at the beginning that these started in Japan and they've spread all over the world. The sort of the nature of escape rooms change depending on what culture they are. So if you as two Americans interested in escape rooms go to Japan or go to one in Europe someplace, is there sort of you're off center because there's just cultural things that maybe aren't as obvious to you?
Absolutely. There's a couple of things at play here. We have some friends who went to Japan, and it's actually really hard for Americans to play in Japan because everything is in Japanese.
I think there are three games in all of Japan that are playable in English.
Okay.
But what we've heard about Japanese games, and you can see it in the games that have been imported from Japan to the U.S. and then sort of changed for the U.S. market, is a very different style. The Japanese like a more puzzle-dense style that Americans would probably consider tedious for the most part. And so it's just a different play style.
Yeah. Even throughout the United States, if you go to different cities, you'll start to see and feel different, different vibes, different approaches to game design. New Orleans has a very heavy immersive focus, and this particular mix of immersion and puzzles that we find very appealing. Los Angeles tends to lean a little bit more towards storytelling and immersion, and a lot of the games there have horror elements, which are not all that common throughout the rest of the country. There are horror escape rooms; they're always clearly marked for those who are afraid. But for the most part, the majority that we've seen have been in Southern California. If you go up to Seattle, you'll see games that are much more focused on puzzling. And they have a really great puzzle vibe up there. It's a unique feel. So everywhere you go, the markets develop a little bit differently, and we're eager to see what Cincinnati is like.
Well, you know, one of the things in Cincinnati is this new escape room that's going to open down on the banks is just a few doors from the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, which I have a longtime connection to, but are there escape room? I mean, there's certain irony here that you have an escape room next to the Underground Railroad Freedom Center. But are there escape rooms that try to pick up sort of historical context and turn those, storylines, context into something that is both challenging, fun, and, based on some real experience?
Absolutely. It's really hard to do, and it's really hard to do well.
Especially with a sensitive subject like escaping slavery.
Yeah.
We know of some designers who have been working on different types of historical sort of teaching type escape rooms. There's one designer out of Australia who we've talked to a lot who has been working on different types of concepts that do exactly that, that take hard situations and our learning experiences about putting people in those situations. And we haven't played his games yet. But it is really hard to do well.
Yeah, there are a lot of games that will take some of the more fun elements of history and turn them into games. There have been instances around the world where people have taken some of the darker moments in history and have gotten a fair bit of backlash for attempting it. I think that it's absolutely possible to do a emotionally impactful, intelligently written, historically accurate game that covers a sensitive subject like slavery or the Holocaust. Whether or not there's an audience that's willing to allow for that is up in the air, and how much appeal there is up in the air. I think that it could be done well. I think that it could attract a mainstream audience, but it would take a lot of skill to really nail it.
Really,
and they would have to be prepared for the PR that's going to go with it.
Because yeah. there's a big difference, and it's for both the players and the creators between, say, something like a video game or especially a movie or a novel, where the creator has 100% control over, you know, everything that is all of the action that's happening. The only interpretation that the player, you know, the only role that the player gets in it is to, or the reader or viewer is the interpretation of it. Of course, people can misinterpret, but a lot of it was still controlled. When you put people into an environment and say, this is immersive, go and play and have your own adventure, there is a story, there is an arc that is planned by the creator, but ultimately the player has a lot of freedom to act within it. Mm-hmm. And that adds a lot more complication.
Okay. We sort of raised here the question of who the market is. These are businesses. These are for profits, right?
And oh, yes.
So the question is, you know, who do these businesses depend on? Who are the people who really become the audiences for the escape rooms?
Different escape room businesses are targeting different markets. So there is definitely the type of business that is really targeting that corporate team building audience. They're building facilities that have conference rooms and spaces for that. And they're building games that are, palatable, I guess, in terms of theme and story to corporate audiences where no one's going to be offended and HR doesn't have to get involved and all of that. So there's that angle. There's also escape room businesses that are catering more towards a player base of friends and families and your general consumer who's looking for some sort of entertainment, and entertainment that takes them, that lets them interact with people in a way that's not passive.
Right. There's a real activity here. Yeah.
So one of the things that in the early days, all of the creators were assuming that their target audience were male gamers between the ages of 20 and 35, or even younger than that. The truth has started to settle out that the bulk of the bookings are actually happening by women between the ages of 30 and 55 in a large portion of the United States. That's being attributed to women in general planning social gatherings much more readily than younger men do. So as we've seen that happen, the audience, the way that the games have been designed, that whole approach has slowly been shifting to that audience. And what we're seeing is games that are much more, you know, much more interesting as a result of it.
Well,
it's much.
Yeah. No, I want to thank you. David and Lisa Spiro, we've run out of time, but I think we ought to go have some experiences and stop talking about it. So thank you for being with us today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.